go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go. We are off and running on this 29th day of September 2017, the final horn broadcast of September 2017, and the final horn broadcast for about a week. I will make every effort to be home on Friday in plenty of time to jump in behind the microphone and get us going on another Friday on the Front Porch conversation. The other 4 days, well, that's going to all be work in D.C. So I thank you for your forbearance. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is Friday on the Front Porch here. And in about an hour or so, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and just see what's on folks' minds. We are streaming live at WhiteRoseSociety.org or HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. We're also streaming live at headon.live. Lots of different ways to get the program. You can pick us up on TuneIn. TuneIn picks up off of the White Rose stream, so that gives you an idea of how that works. There may be periodic, more frequent than usual, bouts of silence in the next hour or so, because since I'm getting ready to go on the road, something appears to be making me sneeze and cough and... Yeah, I don't need that, but it apparently, well, I don't know. I'll do beer bongs of orange juice over the weekend or something. So that's going to be. You know, just little bouts of And then I'm just trying to keep you from catching this over the interweb tubes. It's not fun, whatever this is. If you click on chat room, of course, you can grab yourself a screen name and a password and participate in the chat room. That's why we named it that. You get the idea, right? And if you do, you will immediately be greeted by Anatole and Jug of Punch and Squeaky and Steve from Georgia Stan, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a Spacing Guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes. So everybody's just waiting to see you if you want to jump in. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast, and I'm happy to announce... I'm thrilled to announce that we are down to just needing to raise an ordinary night's funding, and I can't tell you how thrilling that is. As we finish off the month of September, and we lick the Lithuanian and nudge the Norsky and cash the check, and it all happens if we just raise $200, and that is magnificent news indeed. In fact, I don't know. I don't know how many subscribers there are on the 30th. So, yeah, call it about $200. It might be like $180, but I'm not sure. But that's magnificent. That's wonderful. So that next week we'll just be dealing with what we've got to deal with next week. So thank you very kindly to our subscribers. We've got a couple of them on the 29th day of the month. Thank you very kindly to Teresa in Massachusetts. And thank you very kindly to our buddy, Edward. Thank you, Edward, in Dallas, as well as members of the Horn community who jumped in to knock down everything that was remaining. Thank you very kindly to Susan. Thank you to our buddy Frank. Thank you, Frank, so much. Thank you to Chris. As a result of that, like I said, we're done. We're done with fundraising. All the overage from the rest of the week is taken care of. And all we have to do is finish out the evening. Isn't that lovely? Speaking of which, I had a nice note from Marcy of Lick the Lithuanian fame. Mm-hmm. Marcy says, I'm sure you're in the midst of preparations for Friday on the front porch. This came in just a few minutes ago, but I hope you see this before the program. I did, and I like to share this kind of correspondence with the rest of the community. You're certainly doing a fantastic job this week. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. I was very interested in the history lesson regarding the long-lost fifth verse of the Star-Spangled Banner. I know. Wasn't that cool? Wait a minute. Oh, it's going to be one of those. That's just great. you wait, and then nothing. And the eyes water, and right. I'd previously been aware of four, so thank you again for a timely history lesson. Thank you, too, for the talk interview with Ed Rabel. I found it both fascinating and educational. Even more interesting were the articles I found afterward, castigating him for his views and banning him from even being mentioned on a Charleston station. That's my kind of guy. I recall his name from a long while ago as a news correspondent, but he'd fallen off my radar. This week has proven your worth to the community and has shown that you were deserving of the vacation you took and for your excused absence next week. Thank you. It's an excused absence now. Yay. I've got a hall pass. Thank you, Marcy. My schedule, Marcy continues, frequently has me catching up on the Horn via podcasts rather than live programming. This pains me at times because I'd like to contribute to the conversation. Last week, I was pleased to find out that a nominee for a federal court has named me as a part of... I think this calls for reverb, Marcy. Satan's plan! Impressed? Yes. This week, since it appears that we cannot let go of the kneeled issue, I'd like to point out that Title IV U.S. Code, Chapter 8C, as quoted by Cornell Law School, liberal hacks, states, the flag should never be carried flat or horizontally, but always aloft and free. Further, 8D calls for the flag not to be used as clothing, drapery, etc. So for all those maggots and other chest-pounding, flag-waving merkins out there, please make a bonfire out of your bandanas and scarves and T-shirts and whatever else, and make sure you protest that abominably large flags, which take dozens of people to even unfurl from the sidelines. Protest that, and I'll know you're intellectually and patriotically pure enough to protest the players. Oh, on a little side note, the verb used throughout that chapter is should. Should, should not, should never, not will or shall, or will not or won't. Therefore, grammarians, like me, will know that it forms not a command, but more of a preference. I will also add that by using should as opposed to must or something like that, it forms the basis of what constitutes, you know, good manners. But that's just me. Time to close, but not without me letting you know that catching up on my fundraising commitment, had a little snafu with PayPal last month and fell off the automatic payment, so I've been trying to deal with it manually. May switch over to the Patreon campaign come October. And finally, I'm just so glad when you guys notice. And finally, thank you for the weekly warnings to the listeners about the sandworms. Blessed be the Maker and his water. Yes, in his comings and goings. Absolutely. How can this be? Yep. So that's a note. That's a note from Marcy. Thank you. Thank you, Marcy. I don't get a lot of emails from Marcy, but when I do, they got a wallop packed in them. I personally want to know more about Marcy being part of Satan's plan, because sort of like the, and not that I'm comparing the two or associating the two, it's one of those things, Satan's plan, gay agenda. I hear a lot about it, but dadgummit, you know, I never see a copy. Oh, well. But apparently somebody has a copy, and our very own Marcy, a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation, is part of it. And I feel a certain kinship with that, because a long, 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 long time ago, way back when I was just a pimply-faced gospel DJ, I too was accused of being part of Satan's plan. So at the very least, it's nice to, meet another sojourner in the plan, right? Yes. Thank you, Marcy. Thank you very much indeed. So that gets us kind of caught up with the mailbag. I tell you what, Marty, if that's the case, I'm so screwed. Marty says, apparently you're developing an allergy to politicians. I hope not. I sincerely hope not. And by the way, while it's true that that this is a listener-supported broadcast undertaking, I do have one question for you. Do you sleep at night? Do you wake up in the morning? Are your digits attached to the ends of your limbs? Do you have a bone in your leg? Do you yearn for more pep in your step? More stub in your chub? More pong in your woohoo? More motion in your lotion? Yes, 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 yes. Well, friends, let me tell you about Avuncular Avocado. Avuncular Avocado, scraped fresh off the floor of Horn Labs each and every day. Our scientific geniuses have found a proprietary process to pack the juice of 13 avocados into each and every avuncular avocado capsule. Right, absolutely. Each order ships with a full month's supply of avuncular avocados. But wait, there's more. Order in the next 4.5 minutes, and we'll include a 5-cent bundle of test strips, so you can test the results at home for yourself. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Avuncular Avocado from Horn Labs doesn't do a goddamn thing. Avuncular Avocado. Order now and we'll ship a second pack of Avuncular Avocados for double the price. Plus, you'll pay the shipping and handling, too. Order now. Supplies are depleting fast, just like your bank account. Operators are standing by. Avuncular Avocado from Horn Labs. Accept no substitutes. Use no hooks. Post no bills. This side up. You know, I've never cared much for avocados. And to this day, Avuncular Avocado is the only way I can get my daily supply of avuncular avocado goodness. Yes. Avuncular Avocado, another worthless nutritional supplement sold only on the radio via Horn Labs. Entirely a bullshit, bogus, meaningless, useless product, just like the other stuff sold on the radio. Okie dokie, when you're feeling down, well, make yourself green with energy with Avuncular Avocado from Horn Labs. And just remember, when you order Avuncular Avocado or Peripatetic Pomegranate or Perky Pumpkin, you're free to do with it as you please. You can rub it, scrape it, stuff it, swallow it, snort it, any way you want to, and absolutely nothing will happen. Avuncular avocado, only from Horn Labs. So that's everything we've got to do to get the program rolling. Here in about 45 minutes or so, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is the Horn Friday on the Front Porch conversational group. I don't know about you, but I sure do look forward to this every week. I saw something after the program ended last night, and I knew that it would be a thing by today. Beyond the mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, blessing out the temporary seat warmer over there at the Department of Homeland Security, who described the federal government's response to Puerto Rico as a good news story. No, the mayor of San Juan said, no, it's not. And she wasn't particularly shy or retiring in the way that she described it. And along the way, you get the idea that if words, well, she lit up, Kaiser Kumquat. FEMA director Elaine Duke and the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini decided that it was time to pat themselves on the back today. And, San Juan Mayor Carmen Yulín Cruz, she had a response. It was going on when Ali Velshi was at the anchor desk on MSNBC, and this is sort of how it went down.
The Puerto Rico mayor making a plea to the president live right now in San Juan.
If not, the world would see how we are treated. Not as second-class citizens, but as animals that can be disposed of. Enough is enough. Le voy a pedir a la compañera de Comerío que nos explique para que hayan otras voces.
Okay,
just got in on the tail end of it there. But I don't speak Spanish, but I'm pretty sure she wasn't talking about what a heck of a job President Brownie has been doing. No, she said instead, we are dying and you're killing us with the inefficiency. Let's go back to MSNBC again.
Responding to all of the developments today together and talk about it on the other side.
FEMA asks for documentation. I think we've given them enough documentation. And they have the gall this morning. Look at this. Look at this. They think that weighs enough?
That, by the way, since that's a visual reference on the radio program, those are 2 3-ring spiral notebooks, 3-ring notebooks with paperwork in it, approximately 6 inches thick. And disgustedly, she just dropped it on the ground.
We have the gall this morning of asking me, what are your priorities, Mayor? Well, where have you been? And I have been very respectful of the FEMA employees. I have been patient, but we have no time for patience anymore. So I am asking the President of the United States to make sure somebody is in charge that is up to the task of saving lives. They were up to the task in Africa when Ebola came over. They were up to the task in Haiti, as they should be. Because when it comes to saving lives, we are all part of one community of shared values.
Madam Mayor, just one observation, and I'm certainly not criticizing anything you have to say. That was then, this is now. That was a different president. That was a president who is not a racist. That was a president who was not a white supremacist. Donald Trump is a white supremacist. Donald Trump is a racist. Donald Trump had to be shown where Puerto Rico is. The only thing Donald Trump knew about Puerto Rico previously, and probably part of why he's behaving the way he is because the last interaction that Donald Trump had with Puerto Rico was to attach his name to a golf course and then turn around and shaft the taxpayers of Puerto Rico for about $32 million. It really happened. And then he was gone in the night. And he's probably still pissed off about it, even though he managed to figure out a way to shaft the taxpayers for about $32 million. So we're dealing with a different president, Madam Mayor. We just are.
I will do what I never thought I was going to do. I am begging. Begging anyone that can hear us to save us from dying. If anybody out there is listening to us, we are dying, and you are killing us with the inefficiency.
That's painful to hear. And she wasn't grandstanding. She wasn't showboating. And she wasn't exaggerating. Earlier in the day, as I watched, they cut away live to a reporter in Puerto Rico who was standing by a line that was God only knows how long. In the course of the report, the reporter spoke to one 86-year-old man, a veteran of the conflict in Korea, who also, like Mayor Cruz, begged for help, begged for relief. Begged. An 86-year-old man. Because he had been standing in a line since about 5 o'clock this morning to get 2 bags of ice. But that story gets worse. The 86-year-old man, along with the hundreds of other people, were standing in line to get 2 bags of ice for which they had to pay $3. A dollar and a half a bag. No money, no ice. Now, I understand. Ice is not free. Ice costs money to produce. It's very energy intensive. Arguably the more so on a tropical island in the Caribbean.
But in the United States, that's one of those moments where in the look, it's not like I'm saying, well, you know what? I need to
go get a bag of ice for the brine bucket because I'm making some barbecue for this weekend, and I want to make sure it stays nice and cold in the brine because you got to use a big 5-gallon bucket, and that's how we do it. Yeah, you run up the road, you buy a bag of ice. This is not that. This is people absolute. This is ice as a condition of continued life. This is a matter of using it not to cool your drinks, but to keep medications cold. To keep food from spoiling in the tropical heat. And the supposedly greatest, wealthiest nation on earth had no way to look at an ice plant because it was coming from an ice plant. There were people who were wearing the T-shirts of the ice plant who were distributing it. When they cut to the long shot, there were two guys handing out bags of ice, and there was one guy who was collecting the $3, $3, $3, $3, $3. The greatest, wealthiest nation on earth can't reach out to an ice plant, and maybe it was the only one functioning, who knows, and say, listen, give the people what they need, you will be reimbursed. We don't know where the water that they were using for the ice was coming from. I'm not necessarily damning the ice company. But in those circumstances, how do you turn away somebody who says, I don't have the three? Because guess what? It takes electricity to run. The banks aren't open. It takes electricity to run an ATM. The ATMs have to be serviced and have the cash put in them. They're not little printing presses that just run off scads of dollar bills. And so what happens when there aren't any more $3s? You don't get any ice. And so I did see a note. I saw a note from Sparky earlier, who said, your airlift is starting. Sent me an excerpt from a news story. During the last week, the military's relied primarily on moving relief supplies and launching search and rescue operations from the USS Kearsarge, an amphibious assault ship staged between Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. National Guard members, along with Marines and sailors from the Kearsarge, had cleared runways at 10 of the island's airports by Wednesday, drastically increasing the flow of aircraft flying onto the island. The military aims to fly about 10 planes per hour into the region Wednesday to provide relief. That was this previous Wednesday. Only 3 to 6 aircraft had been able to land each hour previously. So it's good to know that somebody is able to do something while Tangerine Tiberius is asleep at the switch. And within the last 24 hours, he bragged that we're doing very good with the death count. People are really amazed at the death count. And once upon a time, somewhere between January 20th and now, I would have said, please, please, somebody, remove this man from office through the legal mechanisms that are provided in the Constitution, please. Lives depend upon it. Well, now people are dying. And no, it's not a great body count. It's not a beautiful body count. It's not a fabulous body count. No. Now the inaction is going to be measured in human lives. Granted, they're human lives that Donald Trump doesn't give a tinker's damn about, but they are, in fact, human lives. And it just wrenched my heart to see the anguish on the face and in the words, hearing the words spoken by San Juan Mayor Carmen Yulín Cruz. Because again, she wasn't just making stuff up. And we're going to find out what all of this inaction has cost sooner than we want to. 29 minutes before the hour, and yeah, like I said, I knew this other thing would be a thing as soon as I saw it last night. The internet, the maggots are getting really, really upset. Of course, it doesn't take much to get the maggots upset. But they're upset because of something that a school administrator in Massachusetts did. In an effort to act to appear as though she gives a rat's ass about anybody in this country who isn't her, First Lady Melania Trump sent out a bunch of books as part of National Read a Book Day. And so she sent books to schools across the nation. And she selected one school from each state to receive the precious gift of books from her, Melania Trump, the first lady in the history of the United States to take her clothes off for money. Well, the school librarian for Cambridgeport Elementary School in Massachusetts is Liz Phipps Suero. And they were the lucky recipient of Melania's gift. Oh, blessed school. Oh, fortunate school, Cambridgeport Elementary. And she sent Melania an open letter. She said, "I work in a district that has plenty of resources which contributes directly to excellence. Cambridge, Massachusetts is an amazing city with robust social programming, a responsive city government, free all-day kindergarten, and well-paid teachers. My students have access to a school library with over 9,000 volumes and a librarian with a graduate degree in library science. Many schools around the state and country can't compete. Massachusetts has excellent schools. Meanwhile, school libraries around the country are being shuttered. Cities like Philadelphia, Chicago, and Detroit are suffering through expansion, privatization, and school choice with no interest in outcomes of children, their families, their teachers, and their schools. Are those kids any less deserving of books simply because of circumstances beyond their control? Why not go out of your way to gift books to underfunded and underprivileged communities that continue to be marginalized and maligned by policies put in place by Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos?" Ooh, shots fired. Burn. "You may not be aware of this," she continued, because Melania had sent a bunch of Dr. Seuss books. And, you know, heck, I was raised on Dr. Seuss books, but I'm also in my mid-50s, and a lot of excellent children's literature has been written since Dr. Seuss. But she sent Dr. Seuss books. I don't know, Cat in the Hat, Fox in Socks, Daddy Drinks Because You Cry, I don't know. But she sent Dr. Seuss books. And once upon a time, Dr. Seuss, you know, there are elements of Dr. Seuss that are kind of groundbreaking. You'll notice if you go through, I don't know, maybe somewhere else out in the radio universe, somebody's doing textual criticism of Cat in the Hat right now. But, well, you can count on that kind of thing here at the Horn. Cat in the Hat, there's no dad. Cat in the Hat, there's no mention of dad. Just the fact that mother has left and left two small children in the home who should probably not have been left unattended, as can be proven by the mayhem that then breaks out. As the Cat in the Hat brings Thing 1 and Thing 2 in, and I believe there's a search for a three-legged, moss-covered family credenza. You may not be aware of this, but Dr. Seuss is a bit of a cliche, a tired and worn ambassador for children's literature. Another fact that many people are unaware of is that Dr. Seuss's illustrations are steeped in racist propaganda, caricatures, and harmful stereotypes. Yeah. And you can see how this developed. I mean, if you've never had to really buy any, you know, if you live 3 miles under the surface of the earth, under a rock, in a cave, in a box, under some rocks, with a fox, you've at least heard of Dr. Seuss. I'd say probably a close second is Maurice Sendak and Where the Wild Things Are. So somebody said, we need something to make the First Lady look good, like she cares about the Proles kids. It's National Read a Book Day. Let's send some books around. What do you think? Oh, Doc, get a shit ton of Dr. Seuss books. No, who cares? Right? And that's how something like that happens. Because Ms. Phipps Suero did what she did, she has immediately been chastened. A statement from the Cambridgeport Elementary School said, "We have counseled the employee on all relevant policies, including the policy against public resources being used for political purposes." Well, I just read it. That doesn't sound particularly political. It sounds to me like she was saying, "We don't need the books. Put a little thought into it next time." Maybe if she had graded it and sent it back, you know, graded it in red pen, and sent it back. Because in fact, she was gracious to Melanoma. And she thanked her, and she said it was a wonderful gesture, if one that could have been better thought out. The letter went on, "Books can be a powerful way to learn about and experience the world around us. They help build empathy and understanding. In return, I'm attaching a list of 10 books, it's the librarian in me, that I hope will offer you a window into the lives of the many children affected by the policies of your husband's administration." Oh, there's the political. No, that's not political. That's not political either. "You and your husband have a direct impact on these children's lives. Please make time to learn about and value them." Yeah. And, of course, like I said, there's a maggot poop storm that has brewed up as a result of this. Mm-hmm. And one of these days, Melanoma is just going to walk to the microphone and say, "I was born poor black child." Mm-hmm. Because once upon a time, Michelle Obama read Dr. Seuss books to little kids. So that's what they did. We need to send books to little pro children. Find some books to send. What did Michelle Obama do? And they found a clip of Michelle Obama reading Oh, the Places You'll Go. Because that really happened. And they sent out Dr. Seuss books. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Stephanie Grisham, who is the communications director for Melanoma, said she has demonstrated this in both actions and words since her husband took office, and sending books to children across the country is but one example. To turn the gesture of sending young students some books into something divisive is unfortunate, but the First Lady remains committed to her efforts on behalf of children everywhere. Yeah, how's that anti-bullying campaign going, Melanoma? Because you certainly, apparently you haven't mentioned your little campaign to your husband. But then again, maybe you know better, because he might hit you or something. I hear he's that kind of guy. Yeah. Oh, and from the, back to Puerto Rico for a minute. From the annals of bottom-feeding, predatory, evil. Oh, wait a minute. That's very good. Note coming in from Steve in New York. Cowbell for this. Those Dr. Seuss books, Steve notes, she was just getting rid of the ones that General Kelly finished reading to Donnie Tiny Hands. Very nice. Well done. But no, in the midst of the agony and the anguish and the misery that is Puerto Rico, how about this? A group of bondholders for Puerto Rico reached out in their kind, generous way. And in the midst of the aftermath, the horror and the hell of Hurricane Maria, they wanted to make an offer to Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. They wanted to sell them some new bonds. Hey, kid, you want to buy a bond? Huh? First one's free. The Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority bondholder group, who is holding on to a lot of paper that's of dubious worth right now, wanted to swap $1 billion in existing bonds for another $850 million bond. In other words, they wanted to get themselves some fresher debt. But according to David Dayan, writing over at The Intercept, it wasn't entirely a matter of eleemosynary goodwill. Because right now the bondholder group, like I said, could just as well make paper airplanes out of those bonds. Or, you know, paper a room with them. Because that's about as much value as they have. But if Puerto Rico had said, what? Free money? Sure. Then they would have been catapulted to the front of the list of people who can run in and try to cash in on Puerto Rican debt. And by the way, they came with some whopping good interest payments. It was, in fact, a worse offer than it had tendered back in April before the hurricane. Reached for comment, Puerto Rico's Fiscal Agency and Financial Advisory Authority said such offers only distract from the government's stated focus and create the unfortunate appearance that such offers are being made for the purpose of favorably impacting the trading price of existing debt. So then, because they just can't resist, Thomas Wagner, who comes from an outfit called Knighthead Capital Management, they're one of the groups that's involved in holding the debt, showed up on Bloomberg TV. And Thomas Wagner said, "What we're trying to do is lend where our investors are not disadvantaged, where the capital is not expensive." As of Wednesday, the bonds were trading at 43.4 cents on the dollar. They're down from 52.5 cents in late August. The Puerto Rican Fiscal Agency and Financial Advisory Authority went out and said that groups of these predatory jackal, hyena, flesh-plucking scavenger outfits, quote, need to refrain from making unsolicited financing offers at the expense of the people of Puerto Rico. Not a single bondholder lawsuit has been withdrawn. Not a single bondholder has offered any form of realistic debt relief. Yeah. And my God, the list of parasites... of people who, people, corporations are people, my friends, human beings. Here are some of the sleaze bags. Angelo Gordon and Company. Appaloosa Management. Archview Investment Group. AMBAC. Aristea Capital. Aerograss Capital Partners. Assured Guarantee. Aurelius Capital Management. Avenue Capital Group, Blue Mountain Capital Management, Brigage Capital Management, Candlewood Investment Group, Canyon Capital Partners, Carmel Asset Management, Centerbridge Partners, Cyrus Capital Partners, Citibank. Aw, Citibank donated $250,000 to the Red Cross. In other words, Citibank threw $250,000 down a rat hole. D.E. Shaw, Double Line Capital, Farallon Capital Management, FGIC, Fir Tree Partners, Forest Investment Group, Franklin Templeton Investment Company. On and on and on and on. Because that was just the F's. We've still got the rest of the alphabet to go. And they're lined up. And they're swirling their long snaky tongues about their jowls. And they're waiting for a chance to move in and gnaw on flesh. Because the business of America is business, yes. You can, as Arthur notes, you can almost imagine them touching their little fingertips together and looking at the people of Puerto Rico and say, "They'll make you offer you can't refuse, believe me." Just a few things that are out there on the radar. Oddly enough, I haven't seen any gatherings of maggots chanting, "Lock him up, lock him up, lock him up," and no hashtags of Crooked Jared from Twitter bot accounts that have 9-digit long account names and no followers. Because, see, Jared has that little private email server problem. Trey Gowdy of South Carolina, nowhere to be found. Devin Nunez, not in the least bit bothered. Because, see, there's some email that matters, and there's some that doesn't. You want to guess which email is worrisome? Yeah. You know, of all the stuff that's out there, even in the hacked emails, the stuff that was released by Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, that was provided to them by, you know, sweet, snuggly, cuddly, friendly, crispy bear, you know, people. Nothing quite like what Jared was, and several other members of the Mango Mussolini organization have done. That is responding to bullshit email accounts purporting to be a member of the administration. Like the one, the one that snared Jared, in which he, kind of got, not Jared, but a member of the White House counsel, fake Jared wrote and said, I need to get rid of some, I need to get rid of some porn. It involves Lego. Can I just zap that off my private server? And his lawyer fell for it lock, stock, and barrel. Lock him up. Lock him up. Because it's not just, it's not just Jared. It's a whole bunch of people in the administration. Right. Oh, a while back, we talked a little bit about on this program about the dubious friends of Donald Trump. A documentary from Netherlands, from a Netherlands public TV type group. Well, part three has been released. It's called The Dubious Friends of Donald Trump, part three. See what I told you? The Multi-Billion Dollar Fraud. In it, director Xander Rietveld pursued a money trail regarding the transfer of funds from Kazakhstan to the U.S. His thesis was to, or his purpose was to see, quote, how this could relate to Donald Trump, the Trump Organization, and Trump's real estate. Well, it yielded results. Rietveld describes his work as a follow-the-money documentary revealing the connections between several people in Trump's orbit and an alleged multi-billion dollar fraud. Uh-huh. And apparently some oligarchs even tried to get it from ever being shown. All the way to court, where a judge said, nope, show the documentary. And once again, it centers on the activities of Felix Sater. Who is, of course, a former business associate. And for all we know, present. But yeah, a business. He's been a business associate of Clementine Caligula. Yeah. So it might be worth looking for. I don't know when I'll get a chance to watch it, but At some point, I will. So those are just a few of the things that are out there in the consciousness, if you will, that we can gnaw on a little bit. It's another bad day. One more thing. It's another bad day for Jared. ProPublica reporting that a lawsuit has been filed against Jared. The people filing the lawsuit are residents of what is now referred to as Kushnerville, namely the property management firm that Jared Kushner's real estate company owns. And the lawsuit seeks money damages for all the sleazy conduct that has been perpetrated, you know, in young Jared's name. They come from the Baltimore area. They filed a class action lawsuit over bogus claims for unpaid rent. It was filed 2 days ago in circuit court for Baltimore City. Allegations in the suit include charges that management and related corporate entities have been improperly inflating payments owed by tenants by charging them late fees that are often unfounded and court fees that are not actually approved by any court. Why, that smells like fraud. And then tenants get caught in a vicious cycle in which their rent payments are partly assessed toward the fees instead of the actual rent owed. And then they get to say that somebody's late on the rent again, and they get to assess another fee. Oh, isn't capitalism beautiful? Chelsea Ortega of Santoni, Vokey, and Ortega, a law firm in the Baltimore area that has brought lawsuits for other fee-churning cases, said, "The routine practice of charging tenants illegal fees, combined with filing eviction proceedings against tenants who have paid their rent on time, is predatory and destructive to hardworking Marylanders and their families. This is yet another example of corporations profiting from deceptive policies." Meanwhile, reached for comment, the jackals over there at who run Kushnerville, the Kushner companies, said, "We will respond to the complaint at the appropriate time in the legal proceedings." If they're smart, they'll respond by writing a check and settling out of court. Oh, yeah. So that's, like I said, that's the first hour. That's the filibobster. Sparky will be moderating the Horn Malloy Skype chat group this evening. And so he'll be the point of contact on that. Let's fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And see what's on folks' minds. Shall we? You know how to, well, it's all on Skype. Sparky Dunk on Skype. SparkyDunc. And folks, we'll just see what's on people's minds. Let's see. What do we got music-wise? I'll have something in a second here. Wait a minute. Oh yeah, sorry about that. We'll be okay. All right, break time, and then then we'll get going on this Friday on the front porch to close the month of September and get us done with the week. And then I'll be back in, I'll be back by this time next week. Okay? Yes. This is listener-supported conversation radio, Friday on the front porch. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob. XTC from the Wayback Machine and No Thugs in our house. Seemed appropriate considering, you know, Kushnerville and everything. Got a nice note. Well, I mean, got a note. It's a good note. They're always literate and always deeply observational from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, this being Steve on the Gulf Coast. Subject line, paying the rent. Sounds like they're going for the jugular even sooner than expected, but I noticed it from the moment the hurricane had finished wiping the whole island clean. Debt. A badly managed island deep in debt and so, so ripe and bleeding for more debt and even more debt. Hell on earth without end. Ain't this a wonderful country? Well, come on, you flag-waving, anthem-howling motherfuckers. Ain't it? Regards, Steve on the Gulf Coast. Yeah, I'm guessing there's not a lot of... Well, but I mean... Sheesh. So it is Friday on the front porch, 6 minutes past the hour, and Sparky is hosting this evening. Great to have Sparky back at the helm. It makes life a lot simpler for yours truly here because, well, we'd have to do videos. So I'm looking in one direction, and the computer that Skype is on completely another. I miss a bunch of calls every night because I don't always catch the little thing blinking out of the corner of my eye. So if you want to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, you need to be in contact on Skype with Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, Sparky Dunk, and reach out to him. He'll show you the breadcrumb trail, turn on the Bob signal, and you'll be in the heart of the conversation in no time flat. Good evening, Sparky.
Oh, let me put the binoculars down.
I don't even want to know.
Oh, I was looking at the pomegranates you don't like.
The peripatetic pomegranates?
Yeah, I got a shitload of.
Yeah, don't be making people think that. A great deal of the organic, vegan, free-range, non-GMO, cruelty-free pomegranates that go into every capsule of peripatetic pomegranates comes from Spacing Guild Master Farms there.
Yeah, but I don't own the tree.
Well, of course not. But the Spacing Guild.
No, it was willed out to a friend of my dad's.
Ah, okay.
And he makes pomegranate juice with it, and I get some.
Well, just as long as nobody eats a seed, because according to Greek mythology, things go straight to hell after that, literally.
No, I don't want to even see those seeds. I've grew up with them damn things around me all my life. And when I was a kid here, the man across the street had them. That's how my mom got them in our backyard.
Huh? So it just sprang up spontaneously?
No, she planted them there. She got seeds from his trees across the street.
Oh, okay. Well, and speaking of planting, I've been meaning to announce, we're keeping our fingers crossed here. We may actually get one actual, real, live, no kidding, tomato this year. It's big and green on the vine right now, and before the hard weather comes, we may actually have a tomato. And it's entirely accidental. It was a volunteer. I love those little volunteer plants. We've got some volunteer irises that come up every spring out in the half acre, and just sitting there in the middle of all the weeds, and this beautiful purple flower comes up. But no, we've got a tomato. I had, late spring, before summer, I was grilling some burgers on the gas grill. This is before Agnes found the great big humongous whopping, I can't believe it, bargain on the Acorn cooker. And so I had some burgers on the gas grill, and I had been up to the Wiggling Pig, and they had some imported Canadian Brunetta tomatoes. And they're some sort of heirloom, and they've got a beautiful brown color to them. And you know how you just kind of lop off the top and lop off the bottom? Well, we did that, and there aren't any seeds in there, but we accidentally dropped one. Ferg and I dropped a slice on the porch, and so just picked it up and tossed it over into the little... bed where the little plants are there, and son of a gun if one of them didn't grow. And it is a big, beautiful vine. So if this thing ripens, we're saving seeds. And they're gorgeous globular tomatoes, and they get this rich brown color. I just hope they don't feel too terribly homesick that far away from Canada.
It reminds me of a story. We used to live right next to a produce distributor in Reading. It was an older wood building, and the transients lit it on fire one night. So they hauled the whole building off and everything. It was just dirt then afterwards. Well, as soon as the spring rains quit and the sun come out, tomato plants started sprouting all over the place from underneath that building.
Oh, wow.
So.
Well, I noticed that Jug of Punch in the chat room was talking about the tomato processing he and his lovely spouse are doing.
Oh yeah, he's into it big time. I was down to three plants this year.
Yeah,
I can't even give them away.
They've been peeling and freezing tomatoes all summer long, and now they're making sauce. And Jug noted, takes us 6 pounds of tomatoes to make 1 quart of sauce/gravy. I don't understand the pricing at the grocery store. Yeah. But,
I'm not into all that labor.
Oh, I love it when, you've got to be organized for that kind of thing. Home canned tomato juice. Oh, there's nothing better on earth. Hoo-wee.
I know my mother used to can just like crazy, but, I think I sold the canning pot at a yard sale we had.
Oh, the big porcelain water bath canner.
Yeah, with the rack that you put the mason jars in.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I still got a whole cabinet full of mason jars.
Well, you need to get a keg and have a bunch of friends over and use them for drinking glasses.
Then I'd have to wash them.
No. You send them home with the neighbors as souvenirs. See, that's how you get rid of them.
Yeah, well, they've been collecting dust. You have to wash them to begin with.
Nah, the beer will kill any. Just tell them that's sediment from the proprietary brewing process. You gotta get creative with this stuff, Sparky.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I see we've got a few folks joined in this evening, and let's run over. I see Tracy's with us. Hey, Tracy.
Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear.
Hey, how y'all doing?
We're good. You?
Well, of course I'm stuck in traffic trying to go home. I mean, it's 4:15 in the afternoon, and it's bumper to traffic. But you know,
out there on the 6 and 7/8.
I'm actually on the 101 heading south. I just dropped off in the. Where am I? Yeah, and on my way driving through Calabasas from Agora, so I'm just trying to get back to Encino. I was deciding whether or not I was going to work or not tonight, and I'm like, nope, not going to do it.
Let me up. I've had enough. Thanks very kindly.
Usually I can work on a Friday night, but I just. When traffic is this bad at 4:15, I'm just, not feeling it. So, and I just caught the tail end of what you were talking about Puerto Rico. And when I'm listening to, you know, the Maleficent Mango talk speak, it's like nails on the chalkboard. Because I think I caught the other morning. When he had the nerve to talk about how, you know, Puerto Rico's in debt and this and that, and, you know, and they're an island and they can't do much. And I'm just like, shut up and send help. The random disregard for human life is sickening. I mean, how long ago did this? I mean, they got hit not by one but two hurricanes, and nothing. And here's the thing, you know, I'm supposed to be going on a cruise in December, And our port, our first port is Puerto Rico.
I bet it's not going to be.
Well, and here's the thing, and this is what's pissing me off about the cruise line. Because, you know, those, you know, because, you know, corporations, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And they're trying, because the cruise was supposed to be, it was Puerto Rico, Barbados, St. Kitts, St. Martin, yeah, that's gone. St. Thomas, yeah, that's gone. So, three out of the five islands that we're supposed to be going to are basically decimated. And so now they're trying to say, well, we're trying to figure out what we're going to do, if we're going to do this. And I'm like, but here I am sitting on three plane tickets because my mom's coming with us as well.
Well, you know, Tracy, it occurs to me to wonder if those stops are as gone as they appear, as they may appear to be, because capitalism being what capitalism is, you can almost bet that the cruise lines will do everything in their power to get their the places where they dock up and running.
Exactly.
Well, and a place like St. Thomas, tourism is what there is. Maybe people grow a little something somewhere along the way, but it's tourism, period.
That's it. St. Thomas and, I mean, St. Martin, from what I, you know, after the first hurricane, that island was 90% underwater.
Jesus.
90% of the island was just about gone.
And St. Martin is one of those where you just want to make a little, put a little, write down St. Martin on a post-it note if you were an enterprising investigative journalist and just sort of stick it up there. Every now and then check and see how much of an insurance claim Trump filed for damage to the mansion that he was trying to unload. He started out asking $25 million for it, Tracy, and they had knocked the price down to like $16.9 million or some number like that. What do you want to bet?
Oh, really?
What do you want to bet he files an insurance claim for about $50 million?
Right, exactly. So, hey, speaking of insurance claim, did anything happen to Mar-a-Lago during the hurricane?
Largely unscathed, as far as I could tell.
Damn it! Are you serious?
Seems
well, at least the hurricane's got one of his homes in what was it, St. Thomas or
yeah,
whatever.
No, that's the one in St. Martin I was talking about, Rick.
St. Martin. Okay, so at least he was only one out of two as far as, you know, the hurricane was batted 500 against Trump, so that's not so bad.
Son of a bitch. Yeah, no, the cruise company, they're being really cagey. And here's another thing, what these bastards are doing. So now they're sending me emails because people are probably canceling left and right, right? So now they're sending us emails about upgrading because we're in, and I really don't want to go because the human person that I am, I don't want to see the devastation because see, how can I, being who I am, go to these places knowing how what has gone on in the last couple of months and seeing these people suffer and have a good time?
Hey, Tracy, when are you scheduled to go there?
So the cruise is leaving December 10th. Now, okay. my original itinerary, we were going to fly into Puerto Rico 2 days before the cruise. So we were flying into Puerto Rico December the 8th, and we're going to stay from December the 8th to December the 10th. The cruise is a week long, and then we were going to stay an additional 2 days after the cruise to really enjoy Puerto Rico. So here I am with, you know, hotels, you know.
You were going to stay in San Juan, I take it?
Yeah. Isla Verde.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Do you have trip insurance? Maybe you could cancel your trip and use the trip insurance.
I do have trip insurance, but I can't. It's canceled. It's tricky because since I can cancel any time, I'll only get 50% of my money back.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, you know, because so here's how the trip insurance works. This is the bullshit of trip. It's like, well, since there was had there been an earthquake here, Rick,
okay,
I could cancel the insurance and get my money back.
Okay.
If I lose my job, or Jan, you know, loses her job, I could get all my money back. But since the bullshit of the natural disaster happening there, I can't get my money back. Unless the cruise line cancels the trip.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Now, so, Tracy, let me just ask you, if you don't mind saying, which cruise line?
Norwegian Cruise Line.
Now, are they part of Carnival Corporation?
No, they're not. They're separate from Carnival.
Okay. Back when we went on the Libboat cruise, a million years ago, we were on Holland America, and they're owned by Carnival. And I was just looking at. I just checked on the Holland America page, and they've got a long list of updates to of ports of call that they've shifted around. And for instance, in November, a stop at St. Martin is replaced with a stop at St. Kitts. Nassau has replaced Grand Turk. St. Martin's been replaced with Antigua. St. Thomas has been replaced with St. Lucia. That kind of thing. So,
yeah, see, and that's what they're saying. See, and that's the thing. St. Norwegian Cruise Line is the only one that hasn't done that. And that's what they're saying they're going to do. But my concern is, if we were leaving out of Miami, I wouldn't be tripping. I'd be like, whatever. But see, we're leaving out of Puerto Rico.
Right, and so, that's entirely different. I mean, December things are still not going to be okay. Because I mean,
you're going to have no electricity. How the hell are they going to put you guys up at hotels there without electricity? Maybe they'll have generators. I don't know.
They'll have generators, maybe. You know, they still haven't even got the generator. When is the first? Today's the 29th. Tomorrow's the 30th. So the first is what, Sunday?
Sunday, right.
So
you're like 2 months away.
So we're talking 2 months away. And
it's still going to be a clusterfuck in two months, Tracy.
It's still going to be a clusterfuck. And that's, you know, like I said, if we were disembarking from Miami, I would be like, okay, not that Florida's going to, you know, but the main reason why I chose this cruise was because I've never been to Puerto Rico. And I'm like, oh God, what an amazing cruise! Because we fly into Puerto Rico, we stay in Puerto Rico for a couple of days because the cruise wasn't scheduled to leave Puerto Rico until like 9 o'clock Sunday night. So we have, Friday, Saturday, and pretty much all day Sunday to explore Puerto Rico. And then we come back and still have time to explore Puerto Rico. But, yeah, like I said, for me being me, I just don't want to see. And if you knew, you know, and if you guys knew my mom would be doing missionary work.
I was about to say, yeah.
You know, I would be out there doing missionary work when I'm supposed to be enjoying myself on vacation. Jan is beside herself. And then, of course, you know, say they change our itinerary. But again, I have trip insurance on the hotel because if I cancel, you know, if they change it and I'm not tripping on that. But remember, I have airline tickets and we know what the fuck, you know, we know how airlines are if you try to change your flights.
Well, I think if you do it far enough in advance, you know, you can get like a full credit generally, Tracy. You know, you don't necessarily get a refund, but you can apply it towards, let's say, the next trip.
Yeah, but don't they charge you for change fees? That's what's going to be.
You know, I think they might waive them under the circumstances. I'd like to think they would, but who knows?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and that's what's pissing me off about Norwegian Cruise Lines. I'm like you said, where are they going to get the power? You know, where are they going to get the power? You know, they don't even have food. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, they haven't really shown they've shown some of San Juan, but they have, like you said, they have these trailers docked, you know, parked at San Juan, but they don't even have the truck drivers they don't have the logistics set up to distribute all this stuff that they have.
I'd be very surprised, Tracy, if the cruise line doesn't cancel all departures from Puerto Rico, because, you know, the main problem Puerto Rico has right now is people want to get the hell out of there. They can't be worried about tourists getting in their way.
Right, and Holland America says, should San Juan not be ready to receive guests, we will make that change closer to the cruise departure dates, and booked guests and their agents will be notified. And frankly, you know, it's the difference between what they say at the top of their notification. If a port is open and open for business and welcoming cruise ship guests, there's no better show of support for the Caribbean and the people than to continue to visit. And that's absolutely true. So, because, as noted, that's all there is tourism.
That's all it is tourism. But then again, are they going to, like you said, but are they going to be wet? Are they going to be ready? What is it going to look like there? A friend of mine, they were going somewhere in the Caribbean after a hurricane, and they didn't cancel the trip. And they went ahead and went on their trip. It was a couple of months after, I forget where they were going. And they said when they went, they were miserable because, you know, they didn't have the resource. It was just like, you know, a war zone. And people were just miserable, and the trip was miserable. And they basically stayed on the cruise ship because when they went to shore, you know, the infrastructure was no longer there. All the stuff that, you know, you do on shore, the excursion. And again, I feel so terrible because it's like, how dare I be worried about my trip when people are suffering? People are dying.
Right, and they want to welcome the tourists, but they have to save their lives first. And frankly, they're not getting a lot of help from the main. Yeah. They're not getting nearly what they need from the United States government. It's absolutely maddening.
They're not Americans, Bob. They're not Americans. They're just Puerto Ricans.
They're
Puerto Ricans. They're not Americans. Did you hear the acting head of FEMA finally called them American citizens, the residents of American Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico citizens, like twice during her news conference? Because obviously, you know, they must have heard the criticisms about Trump not referring to them as American citizens.
Yeah, the people, they're good people. What did he say? They're good, strong people. And now he's talking about Puerto Rico. I don't remember the last time he talked about the people of the U.S. Virgin Islands.
No.
What about that?
Well, and that's why the USS Kearsarge is sort of holding station halfway between both. They're flying sorties both to the U.S. Virgin Islands and to Puerto Rico, which sort of begs, and as Sparky noted, the WASP is coming on station as well. But again, it seems like we should be able to do a significantly better job than this, because at the same time that all of this is happening, it was the same time that... That the howler monkey at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue was screeching about how he was going to totally destroy North Korea. Well, Jesus Christ! If you can't save your own citizens, then how much good are you going to be at totally destroying North Korea?
I mean, you're so damn concerned about people kneeling at the fucking national anthem, and he was more upset calling football players sons of bitches than he was about, you know, I wish he was that pissed off about people running people over at Charlottesville. I mean, I was like, you know, you don't call neo-Nazi sons of bitches, but you call NFL football players sons of bitches because of a protest.
He's a psychopath, Tracy. That's the only conclusion you can draw. You know, the guy has, you know, the guy is a black hole, like Kazir Khan called him during the Democratic National Convention. Everything around him, he sucks up and, you know, swallows, devours, you know?
Has anybody been watching American Horror Story?
I've watched some of the past seasons.
The new season, this season, because, you know, it basically focuses on the supernatural.
Yeah.
And now this season is about Trump.
Oh, really? I'll have to check it out. I have to kind of catch up. I think I'm somewhere in season, maybe, how many seasons have they had? Nine?
It's got spot six or, I think it's been about six or seven seasons.
I think I'm still watching the season involving the asylum. I'm towards the end of that season.
Oh, that was like the second season.
Oh, really? Well, I got a long ways to go then.
Well, then anybody, this season is about killer clowns and Trump.
Oh, my God. Jeez.
So it's.
Do they refer to him by name specifically or not?
No.
But it's inferred.
It is not inferred. It is straight up about people voting for Trump. About how people, and it's said in Michigan, about, you know, people going off about how people voted for Jill, you know, how people voted for Jill Stein in Michigan, and and how Michigan threw away, it's said about lesbians and killer clowns and people throwing away their vote in Michigan and all sorts of stuff. I mean, it's
and they somehow make it topical to that kind of a thematic show. It's kind of funny. I have a client who is a pyrotechnics operator. He's going to be sentenced next month for a tax charge, and he actually works on that show, American Horror Story.
Yeah, but this season, I mean, because usually it's all about the supernatural. But
yeah.
This season, I think, is probably the scariest season, because I've watched every season. And this season, I think, is probably the scariest because you're watching how he's getting into how people are thinking and what drove people to vote for Trump, and how Trump used fear to get people to vote for him.
Yeah.
And not only the fear and how that fear is still lingering and what people are using now make
drinking and drugs, I think, Tracy. That's what people are doing about it.
Right. And how the
I'm drinking more.
I have never in my life I don't take them that often, but I'm on a lorazepam. I've never used anti-anxiety pills before.
Mm-hmm. You're far from the only person who does that. I mean, I turn on my TV every morning, like, to see what's going on with CNN. It's like, oh my God, you know.
Yeah, and I'll just note that I picked one hell of a time to quit drinking.
Jeez, yeah, no kidding, you did, Bob. And that choice was kind of made for you, though, unfortunately, Bob, I think.
Tracy, be careful with those lorazepams. I don't know what's going on in California, but out here, they've got what is called Imperative Driving Task Force. There's one in Gwinnett County, and he pulled some son of a bitch over and got him, and all they had in his system was Ambien. And he ended up getting charged for taking an Ambien the night before. So, and I know you drive for a living, so I want you to be careful.
The only time I take them is when I know I'm not going to be, and it's only, my dose is like a half of.
I understand, but they have a very long half-life, so just be careful. I wouldn't want to see you get.
No.
You know, you would have to call Rick to bail you out. The whole thing would just be a mess, you know.
Well, you know, Tracy, I want to point out that. You know, I respect what you said about not wanting to participate in disaster tourism, because I have this long memory. I remember when, was it Bill Catkiller Frist that went on the fact finding junket down after the tsunami in Thailand, and
it was reported that there were photographs being taken, and it was either Trent Lott or Bill Frist. I think it was Bill Frist, and he said, "Now make sure you get some of this good devastation behind me in the picture."
Well,
and,
you know,
that's not what you want to do. And after Katrina, in the fairly immediate aftermath of Katrina, there was there were devastation tours. You know, somebody will always be out there trying to make a buck off something.
Bob, they still do them. When I was in New Orleans 2 years ago, they still do the Katrina bus tours. Can you believe that shit?
They tour the Ninth Ward and then point out the destruction and everything?
Yep.
That's shameful. Jesus Christ. Some people
No, Steve, that's not shameful. That's capitalism. You know what I mean?
Well, I want no part of it, brother. I mean, that's just horrible.
Hey, if it bleeds, it leads, guys. People love to see train wrecks. People love to see car crashes. That's why traffic always backs up when there's a car crash, even if it's in the opposite lanes.
Rubberneckers.
Exactly.
Well, I'd kind of like to shift the topic of discussion, if I may, in a couple of different directions. By the way, Laurel notes, my doctor had to take me off my high blood pressure med, Atenolol, because there's a nationwide shortage of it. We're literally running out of medication for stress. Wow. Just wow. I wanted to bring up a couple of topics. I wanted to let people know, because I've been mentioning the fact that I'll be gone next week. I'm working in D.C. with the AIC campaign, focusing on the AIC Act itself, and also focusing on the suppression of the science by the Department of Interior and the Office of Surface Mining. And with that in mind, I wanted to make sure and invite people to reach out to their members of the Senate, especially good Democratic members. You know, California, we've never, because she's a first termer, we've never had any real conversations with Kamala Harris's office. And to that end, if the members of the Horn Family Community Congregation in California would reach out to her and just, you know, leave a voicemail or leave a message with a staffer, you know, be really, really polite and say, I really want to see the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act introduced in the Senate, and I want to see the mountaintop removal National Academy of Science health science review. I want to see that fully funded, and I want to see it completed, and I want the results to be made public. That would be really, really helpful. If you're in Oregon, reach out to Wyden and Merkley, Cantwell, and who's the other senator in Washington? But Massachusetts, reach out to Markey, and reach out to Elizabeth Warren. Reach out to Gillibrand and Schumer in New York. Reach out to Sheldon Whitehouse and Jack Reed in Rhode Island. I'm just ticking off a few names, but that would be tremendously helpful, because we're going to be working Senate offices all next week until hopefully I get up bright and surly on Friday morning next and come back home and we get to do this again, namely Friday on the front porch. So that being the case, I just wanted
Bob,
to.
Bob, do you have any press release or anything like that you could forward to me so that as a talking point basis when I call Senator Harris's office?
Not at the moment, but we probably will release something, and I'll try to ship it along if that's the case.
Okay, yeah. Be great. Yeah,
she's a badass.
Yeah, she is. She is. She's a tough lady.
Well, and she's filling the seat that was vacated by Barbara Boxer. And Barbara Boxer had a pretty impressive environmental record. I hesitate to call this environmental. I think it's human rights. But really, I don't care how you baptize it as long as the work gets done.
Yeah.
So
Boxer had Boxer supported the AIC Act?
Well, they were supportive of the idea, but What we heard
it never got introduced.
It didn't get introduced, so we're still.
All you need to do is find one senator, right?
Right, one senator who isn't afraid to offend Joe Manchin.
Right.
Well, I don't think Kamala Harris gives a rat's ass about Joe Manchin. So, I think it might tickle her tootsie to fuck with. She seems like the kind of sister that she kind of reminds me of. Me is one of those things. Like I said, it makes me smile just up with white men. It just does. And I think when her and Maxine Waters are cut from the same cloth that way, it's like, you know, just because I'm a black woman, don't discount me and don't dismiss me. So yeah, if it's gonna piss off a white man, I think she would be like, oh yeah, oh wait, I can actually do a human rights issue and save the environment and piss off a white guy too. Oh, bring it.
That's a trifecta, man. Right.
And meanwhile, a little bit of an update. There's already been polling done in Alabama on the race between Doug Jones and Roy Tolamore. And this is kind of surprising.
6 points.
6 points. 50% to 44%. Moore is leading. The poll, however, has a margin of error of 4 points. So I don't think there's been a Democratic challenger of a Republican Senate nominee in Alabama that close in eons.
Did I hear right the last time there was a Democratic senator from Alabama was like in 1992?
Yeah, and immediately after the election, he went turncoat and became a Republican, Richard Shelby, and he's still in the Senate.
Oh.
He filled the seat that was vacated. He filled the seat that was vacated by Howell Heflin, a Democrat who voted more often with Ronald Reagan than some Republicans did.
Oh God, wasn't Howell Heflin was he one of the senators that was in the Watergate hearings? Or am I
Iran Contra. Iran Contra.
Who?
Iran Contra.
Oh, Iran Contra. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But
different
I think this.
Scandal.
I think
same
this.
Republican.
I think this sort of proves my thesis. If nationally Democrats would come together to contest this race, there's a chance of winning, because Roy Tolamore is a genuine, no kidding, brass bound, four cornered maniac. And frankly, as much as they need to hold a seat. He's making the Republicans in the Senate, you know, a little uncomfortable. Now they'll rally around him and everything, and they want that because then never in their wildest dreams did they imagine that seat could be one that they actually had to fight for. And I'm gonna be deeply disappointed. And I'll probably wind up being deeply disappointed if from a national standpoint, this race is not contested. And I stand by my thesis that this is a moment to possibly let wounds heal. This is a moment when, if Bernie and Hillary both would go down there and campaign on his behalf, if they would appear together on the same stage, you might actually begin to see a sort of healing that could yield tremendous results in 2018 and 2020. It could be exactly what we need. Because with that polling data, it was 50 to 44. There's a 4 point margin of error, and there are 6% who are undecided. Well, if those 6% break toward Doug Jones, it's a tie race. Now here's the last little piece of the puzzle. As we learned to our continuing horror, in November of 2016, a couple of things are enough to spoil everything.
people staying home, and excited racists. I want to believe that there, and I may be get, maybe I'll get emails telling me that I'm a that I'm overly optimistic, but I'm working here. I want to believe that there are more people who want civil rights in Alabama than there are Klansmen. And if that's the case, this race can be run. Like I said the other night, I'll take a messaging contest between a guy who's saying gay people should not be allowed to get married and Barack Obama was a Kenyan Muslim versus a guy said, well, say whatever you want to say, but I actually put my money, I put my shoes on and got to work, and I put the men in prison, the Klansmen in prison, who blew up four little girls at a church in Birmingham, Alabama. I'll take that fight any day of the week, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Now, one thing I've heard, Bob, is I think the DNC is somewhat reticent to put too much money into that race for fear of creating a national race that, you know, the Republicans then, you know, like a major, you know, so that they start pumping money into the race. But that's probably bullshit.
Well, no, under any other circumstance, it would absolutely be a logical concern. But Rick, this is not any other race. Are you telling me that the Koch brothers are going to get behind a Klansman?
They might.
I mean, no. I mean, this isn't hyperbole.
They're John Birchers. Their pedigree is the John Birch Society. Their daddy.
Roy Moore could not even gin up 15% of the electorate to come out and vote in that runoff. It's going to be a low turnout election.
Yeah.
I mean, it's December 12th in Alabama. No, there's not going to be 6 feet of snow on the ground or anything. But
Well, they probably stay inside if it gets to be like 50 degrees, Bob, or something like that, I suppose, right?
Oh, they get down in Mobile, they get out the parkas at 50. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But there's,
Rich, don't laugh. We're just as bad in California. When it dips below 70, we start crying.
Speak for yourself, Tracy. I'm from the Midwest. I still have thick blood.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I forget.
I walk around with short sleeves until it gets to be like 40 or so.
Whatever, bitch.
Yeah. I'm playing.
You've been out here long enough. You've been out here long enough. You probably get a jacket on sooner than that.
Well, I think the thing is, I just have to run warm.
I'm amazed by the idea that they even sell jackets in Southern California.
They're hard to find sometimes, Bob.
Oh, that, you know what? Earlier this year, when Janet and I, we went to Mammoth, and thank God I bought my coat when I did, but we messed around and I didn't buy Jan a coat. Finding a coat in, you know, January was a big deal. Usually you can still find a coat, you know, but we actually, remember, Rick, we actually had a winter this year.
Wait, hold the phone. If you can't find a coat in January in Southern California, when do you coat shop?
You usually don't.
Actually, Mammoth is closer to Central California, though, a little further, right. quite a ways north.
Yeah, but you don't buy the coat before you go to Mammoth. You got to have the coat before you get to Mammoth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I bought my coat in December. But the thing is, by January, February, we actually, you know, this last November, December, I mean, because we had the rains and stuff. So we actually had a winter.
Yeah, the snow was almost record, I think, up in Mammoth, wasn't it, Tracy? I think it was.
There was record snow.
Yeah.
So, you know, I bought, because, you know, I was heavier last year, so, you know, big girls, you know, you can't mess around when you find a coat that's going to go over all this bulk. You got to buy a coat. So you got to not only buy the coat, but pay the price for said coat. So, and then, you know, we messed around and didn't find Jan a coat, and I had to actually find go on Amazon and buy her a coat. But it was crazy because usually, you know, I go to Burlington. Usually that was the thing, the cool thing about like Burlington Coat Factory, that Burlington Coat Factory, no matter what time of the year you would go to Burlington Coat Factory, they had coats year round, regardless of, you know, winter, spring, summer, fall, they had coats regardless. But last year and earlier this year, because it was actually cold, like, you know, and like you said, you know, Southern California, haha. But we were, Bob, we were dipping down into the 30s and the 40s. And don't laugh, okay?
I know I'm suffering for you.
We actually had some frost where I live at 2,000 foot elevation, Bob. And a little bit of snow, dusting of snow one day, too.
We had dustings of snow. I would come outside in the morning, and it was in like 30 degrees. I mean,
it gets cold in the valley, Tracy.
It gets cold. I'm like,
you know, relatively speaking, compared to the Bay Center of the coast, you know.
Do you realize that there are members of the Horn Family Community Congregation in places like Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Canada
telling us to kiss their asses?
Who are laughing at you two right now? Laughing at you two.
Well, you know, Californians can be kind of wimpy, Bob. What can I say?
They're saying the kiss. They're telling us to kiss their collective asses. I understand that completely.
Right.
But when you have, you know, like right now, it's 98 degrees right now. Okay.
Isn't that warm? Jeez.
It's 98 degrees right now. And when, you know, when you're not used to seeing anything at 30 degrees, it's, you know, and when when the frost is so thick on your windshield, that even when you're defrosting and it takes 30 minutes to defrost. And I know, again, the people in Minnesota and Chicago and all these other places are listening to me whipping and whining about this shit, like, bitch, suck it up. I understand that. But still, it's, you know, like I said, I don't do cold. That is why I live here. I went to the snow. It was beautiful. Could I live in the snow? Fuck no.
It's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there, right, Tracy?
I understand the beauty of it. I played in it. I actually built a snowman. It was cute. I understand how people like to visit it, but you know, I don't understand the scraping. You know, I actually have to scrape the windshield of my car and all that. I'm like, this is
no, wait a minute. The state of California doesn't have people to, I mean, they got people to put your chains on for you. They didn't have people to scrape your windshields?
No. I mean, do they actually do that?
I would think that all those illegal immigrants from Mexico would be glad to do it for you, Tracy, you know? Well, although Trump is trying to get rid of all of them.
Oh my God! I didn't tell you. I have a Trump supporter story that I actually had a conference. I have. Oh my goodness! And it didn't end in a fight.
Oh my God! Tell us, please.
A few weeks ago, I was at the nail shop, and the people who do my nails, they like to bait me because they know I'm, you know, I am not a Trump supporter, and they like to start stuff with other people in the shop. And I'm like, you know what, you guys are terrible because they're immigrants and they hate Trump. But they, you know, since their English isn't very strong, they're Vietnamese, and so they can't really, you know, articulate the way that they want to. And so, and of course, they don't want to alienate their customers. So, they leave it to me. But so the other day, I was in the nail shop, and I was having a wonderful conversation with this nice Jewish woman. It was right before Rosh Hashanah, and they were, you know, she was talking about how she was getting her house ready, and I was saying, yeah, my wife is Jewish, but she's not observant. She would rather eat a ham sandwich on Rosh Hashanah than do anything. And she started laughing, and, you know, and she was saying how her son is going to be actually going to the school that we transport, you know, through transportation for and all that. And so just as I was about to leave, the news was on, CNN, Chicken Noodle News, and I don't know if Trump came on or somebody said something about Trump, and I said something, and I'm like, I don't know if I called him an asshole. I forget what I said. And I'm like, she's like, well, I voted for him. And I just looked at her, and I'm like, and I wanted to say, and you seem so intelligent, but I didn't say that. And I said, okay. And I said, so at this point, Trump has been in office for 8 months now. And I didn't ask her if she had voted for Obama or anything like that. I just asked her, I said, so tell me, and do you feel comfortable with your choice of who you voted for? Are you proud? Do you feel like he's a good representation of our country? Are you proud that he's our president? And she thought about it. And she's like, well, you know, he does have a big mouth and he does need to watch what he says. I'm like, okay, like, you know, I said, but you're still not answering my question. Are you good about your choice? I said, okay, but what about him made you want to vote for him? I said, has he lived up to his campaign promises? That's what I was asking. And she's like, well, he's done a lot about the immigrants. I said, well, what about the immigrants? Well, you know, they're coming here and taking away our jobs and stuff from our kids. I said, well, did you just tell me that your son just got into this, you know, the private school for special needs children? She's like, yes. I said, well, what immigrant is taking that away from your son? I said, because from what you just told me, He got into, you know, you went through all the processes and he's in the school. So did an immigrant keep your son from getting into this school? And she's like, no. I said, okay. Next question. I said, and by the way, the person that he has as, you know, the Secretary of Education, you do realize that if she gets her wishes, that schools like the help group and stuff like that, there's going to be voucher systems and stuff, and those kind of schools will no longer exist because the schools like the help group, your school, your son is, you know, has an IEP, and because of these IEPs, he's no longer you don't have to worry about him being stuck at LA Unified where they can't help him. It's because of IEPs that he's able to go to the help group, and you don't have to worry about it being paid for and all that. But if, you know, if Betsy DeVos gets her way, there will be no such thing as IEPs and stuff like that. And also, that person that's the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, he's also saying that children like your sons are on a drain on the system and whatnot and so forth. But, you know, and whatnot and so forth. And we also, that I talked about, and she's like, well, you know, that's just people hating on Trump and, you know, people talking about he's a racist and all. I said, well, what makes you think he's not a racist? Well, these just the things that he says, he's just misunderstood. I said, well, it's not so much misunderstood. I said, you do realize that he was sued by the Department of Justice because back in the day, he did instruct his rental agents not to rent to Black people in New York. She's like, oh, I didn't know that. And I said, you remember years ago that woman that was beaten and raped in New York in Central Park, and the five young men that were arrested for that, and they said that they did it, and they were coerced into false confessions, and they spent time in jail. And even after they were found innocent, Donald Trump took out a full page ad saying that they should get the death penalty and all that, after they were found innocent. And I'm like, okay, all that, but that's not racist. But all that aside, let's just look about who he's surrounding himself with. Let's look at Jeff Sessions. Let's go back to that man, Jeff Sessions, that was so racist that Coretta Scott King sent a letter to Congress not to have him confirmed as a federal judge because he was so racist. And that, and then let's look at Steve Bannon, who is, oh, a white nationalist and an anti-Semite. Oh, that's against your people, right? But he's not a racist. And then we went back and forth, and she's like, well, I didn't know all these things. I said, but how can you not? How could you not know these things? And don't you have a daughter? Now, did you remember that he's talking about grabbing women by their, you know, by their private parts? I didn't want to say grab them by the pussy because, you know, I'm in public and stuff like that. But she's looking at me like, you know, I wasn't yelling. I was really calm, but
You just knew stuff.
Right. I just knew stuff. And I said, you know, and then do you feel safe? Now, you could say all you want, you know, when you say, because I said, now, why didn't you vote for Hillary Clinton? Because she said, well, she was the lesser of two evils. I said, now, okay. Now, do you really think, do you really think that if Hillary Clinton became president, do you think that she would be taunting North Korea? Do you really think that she would have climate change deniers head of the EPA? Do you really think that she would have a complete idiot as the head of the Secretary of Education? Do you think that Ben Carson, head of HUD? Do you think that Rick Perry would be the Secretary of Energy? Don't you think that the people that would be running that would be in her cabinet would actually know what they were doing in these cabinet posts? Don't you think that maybe we would have a head of FEMA? Do you think we would have do you think that we would actually have people running the country that knows what they were doing? Do you think that we would have the head of Goldman Sachs as the head of Treasury? Really? Do you really think all these things were happening?
What'd she say?
She's like, well, maybe not. I just said, do you feel that this country is going to be okay? Do you go to bed every night now that this man, that he has to, do you wake up every night? Because I know, she's like, you know, I said, I don't hate Trump. Well, I lied. I didn't want her to think that I hate Trump because I really do. But I said, I pray that every night, I pray that this man, because the only thing that can soften his heart is God. And I pray that every night that God somehow opens up and opens up his heart and gives him a heart and says that one day he will realize that the destruction that he is putting on this country. That is what I pray for, because that's what the Bible tells me. It tells me that the Bible says to pray for the country and our leaders. And that's what I pray for. I do hate Trump, though. I did lie about that.
So did you convert her, Tracy?
Well, I said, so, you know, I don't know what you're thinking now, but I just hope you realize that our country is in dire straits and that we're in trouble. We are nobody takes us seriously. Our allies are just going, what the fuck? This country that used to be a great power is now a laughingstock. And we have an idiot that is our president. And if you think that he's not an idiot, I feel bad for you. But you know what I did? I said, no matter what you think about me, I said, can I give you a hug? And I gave her, and I, after everything that I said, I gave her a hug.
That was nice. So let me get this right. She's a Jewish lady with a special needs kid who voted for Trump.
Who voted for Trump.
That makes sense.
And that's when Bob said about, you know, you got to
low information voters.
Right. You got to hope that there's more of us than there is of them. But
I think people are paying more attention now that they see everything, like, you know, going, you know, to shit, essentially, you know. I'd like to think they are anyway.
What do you think, Bob? Do you think that people are paying more attention now? That do you really think that there is burnout, that people are really thinking, oh my fucking God, what have I done? When I was this man? Besides 36%.
Well, look, I mean, he got a little approval boost back before Puerto Rico and the NFL, and then of course he always plays back down to the maggots. So it's kind of frankly, you know what, you know, I don't necessarily, and I'm not trying to take away from your story, Tracy. I don't want to hear people say, you know, gee, I'm sorry, I voted for him. I want him to. I want to hear him say, "And I will never do anything like that again, as long as I live. So help me fill in the blank, deity."
No, that's what I wanted too. No, that's what I wanted too. Trust me, I wanted her to say, "I fucked up royally."
And not only will I not do that again.
I will stand on the fucking rooftop of my car, of my house, and blasted from the goddamn mountaintop that I, not only did I make a mistake, but I will go and tell everybody that I made a mistake and let everybody know that I made a mistake and pray to God that I convince others not to as well.
In a way, because I've been watching the Vietnam documentary, I got around to the episode with the Nixon resignation in it and everything. And, you know, Burns doesn't mince words. He talks about the evil shit that Nixon was up to, and he makes it abundantly clear that he was a filthy goddamn liar. And, you know, he kind of lays all that out. And then you go, well, you know, everybody knew it. And so we got Jimmy Carter in a narrow election in 76, and son of a bitch, they handed us Ronald Reagan in 1980, and Reagan had been trying to become the Republican nominee for president since 1968. Remember, he was running, it was Ronald Reagan running against Nixon in 1968, along with, Nelson Rockefeller, maybe? Yeah. And so, you know, the American, I'm not encouraged about the possibility of the American people learning anything. And again, I go back to that thesis that I was talking about in regard to Alabama. If you've got an election that's very close at all, then some Klansmen, some neo-Nazis can turn it. And we really don't know, because we never really bothered to find out. We don't know how many elections have been close enough for them to turn. Was the margin of difference in, say, Florida in 2000 narrow enough that having some Klansmen go out to vote and some neo-Nazis go out to vote was enough to make the difference? With some people staying home. We don't know. But I think we can begin to suspect it.
Well, look what happened. Like you said, how many people? I mean, look what happened in 2016. I mean, Hillary did not. Oh, speaking of which, Jam bought her book.
Wait a minute. The devil. let me just go there before you go there. And I want to get Steve from Georgia Stan into the conversation, because he's been way too quiet too. That's the other thing. The number you can Allison Camerota on CNN had another one of her panels to help her understand the Trumpansy mind. And yeah, there were a couple of them who said, "Yeah, I wish the hell he'd quit that damn tweeting. It's time to be president. It's time to quit tweeting." But you know what? All you've got to do is offer up a Democratic nominee, and I don't care who it is. And well, that's the most liberal since. And you get Donald Trump again. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
The American people, a lot of the time, are not who we think they are. And frankly, from the looks of things, when you consider the number of people who probably don't know anything about the story, opinions are going to be continue to be manipulated through social media. I heard one analyst in the last couple of days say that, you know, TV advertising, voters aren't as motivated by TV advertising as they used to be, and that social media advertising is
far more effective because people will see something and they'll think that their friend shared it to them. So therefore, they trust it. You see what I'm getting at? And meanwhile, the whole damn system's broke. The Tom Price thing is an outrage. And so are the other private aircraft flying members of the Trump administration.
And it keeps snowballing too, Bob, this Tom Price thing. I mean, one thing leads to another, and you got all these criminals out there. And the thing is, Tom Price, was when he was in the House, he was the one screaming loudest about, you know, Senate people taking abuse of planes, and look at them. And
well, I mean, he's from Georgia. You knew what kind of a dirtball Tom Price was before he ever got to Washington, didn't you, Steve?
And he reminds me a lot of, I don't know if you watch The Simpsons, but he even sounds like Flanders. And
oh, I never noticed that. Oh my God.
Yeah. And Trump is his Mr. Burns.
Well, howdy doodly, neighbor.
He's Flanders, down to a T. Or who is Trump's side? Mr. Burns' sidekick.
Smithers.
Smithers, right? He's more of a Smithers.
And speaking of which, you know, were you listening the other night when I was talking about sitting down and watching that Katharine Hepburn Spencer Tracy movie Desk Set? And how it sort of has really, really, 1950s style echoes of the direction that we were going in, although it was really, really white. There was another little Easter egg I found in there. Because, see, Hollywood does things. The directors and so forth and creative types like to tuck things into films that they know from previous generations. And you got to consider the generation that Matt Groening comes from, okay? The creator of The Simpsons. So taking that into account, lo and behold, in that movie, Desk Set, there is a smarmy, gossipy, skeevy little functionary from the legal department. What do you want to get? Would you care to guess what the character's name is? Smithers.
Smithers. You see how it all ties together?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's like there's a scene. Oh, there's a scene. You've seen Lost in Translation, right?
Sure.
Well, there's a scene where Scarlett Johansson is lying on her side. The camera's shooting her from behind, and she's got a top on and some little, and you can see her bottom through some little sheer panties. I'm not trying to be pornographic here. Well, lo and behold, that is actually an homage to a rather famous painting from the early 1970s of a woman in exactly that position. And there are all kinds of those little things tucked away in films. Let's see. I was just looking it up here. The name of that particular painting that I was just referencing is Jutta, or Jutta, J-U-T-T-A, from 1973 by John Cassare. And it shows up in Lost in Translation.
If you want to film just chock full of Easter eggs, watch Vanilla Sky. Holy gosh, man. There must be over 300-400 of them in there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Easter eggs is even really the. It's like a back reference.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The scene where him and Tom Cruise and Penelope, what's her name, they're walking down Main Street. That's right off a Bob Dylan album. But then that's just to get started, you know. I mean, but there's so many just back references to that. There's a whole webpage just dedicated to all the back references.
There's another scene with a man sitting on a beach in There Will Be Blood. You remember that movie?
Yep.
He's sitting naked on a or appears to be naked on a beach. And that comes from an 1836 painting, and it's a guy in exactly the same position. Just, you know, cool little things. But
How do you know all this stuff about movies, Bob?
I'm a nerd.
Oh, okay.
It's the same here, Rick.
Nerd.
Don't that's obscure started. Shit. I don't even know that. And I thought I knew a bunch of obscure shit.
But when I was watching that movie, and they said Smithers, I looked up and I looked at what kind and I paid attention to what kind of character he was, and I went, son of a bitch, how do you like that? So, you know, maybe it wasn't, but it's a damn fine little coincidence if it's not.
Well, Groening is smart enough to pull something like that out of his arse. I mean, let's just be frank about it. But I wanted to ask you a question before you got away, Bob. This Puerto Rico thing, it's shaping up to be a worse disaster than Bush and Katrina. Would you agree with that statement? Or
I think so. Well, I mean, it kind of stands to reason that it would be, doesn't it? It's an island. Yeah. It's a relatively large island.
Me and Duncan were talking about this earlier. We've seen this coming since the 11th. Why the hell has it taken us so long to get all this shit together? I mean, that Navy hospital ship, and Duncan's saying it's logistics, and I can go along with that. But shouldn't we have had that thing mobile by at least the 15th, headed that away?
Well, somebody has to give the order.
And there you go. That was the choke point in the neck of the funnel. Somebody has to in a situation like this. Somebody has to tell somebody to go and do it.
Yeah, it's called a recall procedure. You're on a chart, somebody will call. This person will call two other people. Those two other people will call four people, and it goes all the way down through the organizational structure of the military unit you're in. I was on it when I worked on SR-71s, because we could be called in on any time.
So as I was watching the Burns documentary, Sparky, were you servicing those B-52s that went on what was it called, the Christmas bombing?
No, I was working on the SR-71. I was taking the pictures of what their targets were, working on the plane that took their pictures. If you don't know anything about an SR-71, it's a high altitude reconnaissance planes, still the fastest airplane to ever be built. Flew from Okinawa to Vietnam and back in 4 hours and 35 minutes.
And flew so high it was just about unshoot-downable, wasn't it?
100,000 feet plus.
Yeah, that's a spaceship.
No, they used to joke about it. They used to take control of the SAM missiles. They called them telephone poles. They had an electronics warfare cell on the SR-71 that they are. So reconnaissance systems operator ran, and he was able to take over their guidance systems and turn them around and fly them back towards North Vietnam.
Wow, but didn't you?
Because when we had debriefs in Okinawa, and they used to ask him if that's what the code name was. Did you get any telephone poles shot at you? Because
I had it in my mind that you spent some time on B-52s too. Did you not?
I did.
Okay.
But that was after Vietnam War had come to an end. I got to Thailand 15 days after they quit bombing Cambodia, as a reference.
Oh, okay.
And I never worked on B-52s before, and when I first got there, they sent me to KC-135 FAM school, which is familiarization training, so I could work on KC-135. Because at Utapau, he had two sides of the flight line. He had the bomber side and the tanker side. And at the electric shop I worked in, had two trucks, one for the bomber side and one for the 27 East and 27 West. One was for the bombers, one was for the tankers. So I was trained on tankers at first, till the October war came about in the Middle East. Then all of a sudden I got snatched to be a dispatch driver, because I was the only one in my shop, first termer, that had a government driver's license, thanks to working on SR-71s, being a night shift driver in Okinawa to take people back and forth from the T-hanger to the barracks, because we were a separate unit in Okinawa, all independent of the whole base, basically.
And speaking of things Air Force, did you catch this clip from the Lieutenant General in regard to the racism scandal at the Air Force Academy Prep School?
Yes, I did.
Nasty, nasty business. Go home, and that word scrawled on a message board, or on the doors, you know, of African American cadets at this prep school, and it's not the Air Force Academy. It's a prep school that they run for people who appear to be to show the promise of making it into the Air Force Academy. And of course, the Air Force Academy has another problem that we've discussed over the course of the years.
They have a religion problem.
Yeah, a serious evangelical fundamentalism problem. But Lieutenant General J.B. Silveria, who's the superintendent of the Air Force Academy, gave an address to cadets on Thursday, and it's actually pretty powerful. I mean, he called everybody together, and it was a straight up, as the saying goes, come to Jesus moment. And I'd kind of like to run that audio real quick. I got it right here.
You may have heard that some people down in the prep school wrote some racial slurs on some message boards. If you haven't heard that, I wanted you to hear it from me. If you're outraged by those words, then you're in the right place. That kind of behavior has no place at the prep school, it has no place at USAFA, and it has no place in the United States Air Force. You should be outraged not only as an airman, but as a human being. And I'll tell you that the appropriate response for horrible language and horrible ideas, the appropriate response is a better idea. So that's why I'm here. That's why all these people are up here on the staff tower. So let me have everybody who's up here please pull forward to the rails. Also, there are so many people here, they're lining the outsides along the windows. These are members of the faculty, coaching staff, AOCs, AMTs, from the airfield, from my staff, from my headquarters. All aspects of the 10th Air Base Wing, all aspects that make up USAFA and the United States Air Force Academy. Leadership is here. You heard from Brigadier General Goodwin. Brigadier General Armacost is here. Colonel Block from the Athletic Department is here. Mr. Knowlton is in Washington, D.C. right now. That's why they're here. That's why we're all here, because we have a better idea. Some of you may think that that happened down in the prep school and doesn't apply to us. I would be naive, and we would all be naive to think that everything is perfect here. We would be naive to think that we shouldn't discuss this topic. We would also be tone deaf not to think about the backdrop of what's going on in our country. Things like Charlottesville and Ferguson, the protests in the NFL. That's why we have a better idea. One of those ideas, the dean brought people together to discuss Charlottesville. Because what we should have is a civil discourse and talk about these issues. That's a better idea. We received outstanding feedback from that session at Charlottesville. But I also have a better idea, and it's about our diversity. And it's the power of the diversity, the power of the 4,000 of you and all of the people that are on the staff tower and lining the glass, the power of us as a diverse group. The power that we come from all walks of life, that we come from all parts of this country, that we come from all races, we come from all backgrounds, gender, all makeup, all upbringing. The power of that diversity comes together and makes us that much more powerful. That's a much better idea than small thinking and horrible ideas. We have an opportunity here, 5,500 people in this room, to think about what we are as an institution. This is our institution, and no one can take away our values. No one can write on a board and question our values. No one can take that away from us. So just in case you're unclear on where I stand on this topic, I'm going to leave you with my most important thought today. If you can't treat someone with dignity and respect, then you need to get out. If you can't treat someone from another gender, whether that's a man or a woman, with dignity and respect, then you need to get out. If you demean someone in any way, then you need to get out. And if you can't treat someone from another race or a different color skin with dignity and respect, then you need to get out. Reach for your phones. I'm serious. Reach for your phones. Okay, you don't have to reach for your phones. I'm going to give you an opportunity to reach for your phones. Grab your phones. I want you to videotape this so that you have it, so that you can use it. So that we all have the moral courage together. All of us on the staff tower, lining the glass, all of us in this room. This is our institution. And if you need it and you need my words, then you keep these words. And you use them and you remember them and you share them and you talk about them. If you can't treat someone with dignity and respect, then get out.
That's about the most powerful thing I've heard a member, a high-ranking member of the military say in a very, very long time. Kind of, and it's a shame that it's stunning, but it is. That man exercised more moral authority and force. Lieutenant General Jay Silveria. He exercised more moral authority and force in those few minutes than the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue has exercised in his entire miserable, useless life. And that's a fact. What a pity that it had to come from him. But you'll notice he called out Charlottesville. And we all know who we all know who made Charlottesville a million times worse. The guy at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Kind of, I'm you know, the military. What? It's a shame that has to come from the military. I'm glad it's coming from them. I'm glad he took the position he did. But instead of encouraging it as he does, as Trump does, why couldn't he have nipped all that shit in the bud? Instead of giving nudge and a wink remarks about, well, you know, there were some good people too. Anybody? Bueller?
What?
No,
oh, are you good racist, Bob?
The military's been integrated since 1948, thanks to Truman.
Right.
And I know one thing, when I was in basic training, they taught everybody to work as a team, no matter what color you were, where you came from. I mean, I knew guys from the South, the North, the East, the West. I knew black guys. I knew Asians. I knew Hispanics. We all worked together and did our jobs.
But again, if you're watching the Burns documentary, there's and it's frustrating because he does this sort of hit and miss approach to issues. And he did. There was one, you know, brief little segment where he was talking about the African American experience in Vietnam, and they showed one guy that they had been interviewing through the course of the film, who said, "Yeah, I had a radio operator from Arkansas," and he said, "Ain't no way I'm gonna follow you, Sergeant." And he said he got a little better, but he never got completely okay. And they showed pictures of Confederate flags displayed all over the place. And one guy said, "I come halfway around the world, and I'm looking at that damn thing again." And I just imagined some little little cluster of maggots watching it going, "Well, heritage, not hate, man."
But you got to remember, the Army was, a lot of people were drafted. Air Force has been volunteer for like forever.
So there were no conscripts.
Nobody gets drafted into the Air Force
because they can be a little bit more choosy and right.
Yeah, you had to take a test to get in the Air Force. It was called the AFQT back then. I don't know what they call it now. But, you know, I had my Air Force specialty code is different than what people are today because I was an aircraft electrical repairman. But they don't have that AFC anymore. They combined it, from what I understand, with another AFC. Well, you know what I'm talking about, yeah. Especially.
But the fact that even as you describe the Air Force, they've got that problem going on at the place at a school that's designed to prepare people to go and become part of the officer corps. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's going to take to root. Is it possible to root all of that out?
I don't know. All I know is my experiences with people of color. I mean, I had a black shop chief at Beale Air Force Base. Never forget his name, Chief Master Sergeant Luther McCall. He'd been in the Air Force for 25 years. And you didn't give him any shit, because he'd give it right back to you.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out, because if they find who did it, you get the idea that person is gone. Person or persons.
Yeah. Well, OSI is probably investigating it. If it's, I don't know if for that deal with Dave Wee, but I mean, once you're in the Air Force, it's Office of Special Investigations, it's the Air Force NCIS, as you might know it as another term.
Well, that was a lousy time for another sneeze to come along.
Air Force and the Navy are different things from the Army and the Marine Corps, totally, the way they used to be. Oh, and I wanted to clear something up with you, Bob.
Yeah.
It's called retreat when you lower the flag to come down on a base, and it's a different song than TAPS.
Oh, okay. Well, Carl was talking...
That little video I sent you.
Yeah, Carl was talking about hearing TAPS played at the base there, so...
Well, it's that, if you watch that YouTube video, I said, that's the sound. I mean, at Beale, when I first got to Beale, when I lived on base, I was right across the street from the main buildings on the base, and there was a flagpole was right there. And we used to come back in our parking lot for our barracks, was right across the street. And if we stood out there and bullshit or something, we'd see the guys come out of the building, get ready to take the flag down. You used to haul ass, get inside the building real quick. Because if you were out there when that, that music started and the flag started coming down, you're supposed to turn and salute the flag and wait till the music's done, the flag's got down and folded and put away for the evening. It's retreat. Treat to the colors.
Yeah. Well, I know some of the, and I think I even know, I do know what you're talking about. Carl said taps, so, you know, taps it was. Anyway, so we got about 24 minutes left in the program. Anybody got anything that's really, you know, just under the saddle or in the bonnet or anything that's driving them nuts? Anything we may have missed? Because I got to admit, I'm kind of Schadenfreude, enjoying the soap opera over there at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. John Kelly's angry again. And
of course he is.
Well, he's got a lot of stuff to be angry about.
He's Trump's Jesus man, Jesus Trump man, you know. You had your Jesus Barack thing. So he just puts his hand to his head. Looks down and shakes.
Yeah,
his
well,
head,
he's he, yeah, he's getting to be like that meme of the guy from the 50s that, you know, the black and white one that, you know, oh Jesus, not this shit again. That guy.
Yeah, the guy that I got in the chat room. Not again. It was called.
Yeah. Apparently he recently found out that Jared has been running around doing some end run behind the back negotiations. And he was doing them when Kelly was still at Homeland Security. And Jared was negotiating behind his back with Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham. And Politico has reported that he called a senior, he called a bunch of the mucky mucks together, and he said, "We're going to have a meeting with the president." And what it boils down to is that if Jared's going to just be a loose cannon out there, then he, Kelly, was going to hit the bricks. So I don't think I say what I said before. All of these people have some degree of affinity for him, but they don't necessarily get along particularly well.
Speaking of people getting along particularly well, do you think Bernie and Hillary will ever, like you were talking about the election that's coming up in Alabama, do you think there will ever be a moment where they'll say, okay, you know, for the good of the country, we need to reconcile and get our shit together and campaign together and so.
Oh, Hillary needs to stay the hell out of Alabama.
Well, why? She mopped the floor with Bernie there, Sparky.
Well, in the primary.
Yeah.
But she's a loser.
She
still has a lot of supporters. I mean, but see, that's the problem. I mean, yes, she lost the election, but still, there's still a lot of people who still voted for her.
Yeah, she lost the election by getting 3 million more votes than the guy who won. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, she lost it. She lost the, it was the Electoral College, that outdated piece of bullshit that she didn't lose the election. The Electoral College voted that piece of shit. That's
right, and my larger point.
That's the way our system works until you get it changed.
Yeah, it is. And the problem is it'll you know, historically, I don't think there's an example of a Republican losing in an electoral a Republican who wins the popular vote and loses in the Electoral College. It's always the Democrat. Interesting.
I think there was one election in 1876 where the Democrat had more votes than the Republican, And the Republican, back then, obviously, the Democrats were the racist party, and Republicans were the, you know, the party for more equality for people. I think it was Rutherford B. Hayes. And that, basically, there was a compromise struck in which the parties agree. I think Tilden.
Samuel Tilden.
I think they agreed that Rutherford B. Hayes would be the president, and Tilden, you know, would not be the president, but that Hayes would agree to end Reconstruction. I think that was the only time it was flipped. But again, even then, it was a Republican. Well, actually, then it was the
Tilden was the Democrat.
Oh, Tilden was the Democrat. Yeah, scratch that. Okay. Okay, he was the popular vote winner, though. Okay, yeah, I guess it's the same situation. You're right, Bob.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. And
wait, Price was right?
And you know what I'm trying to get at is, there, you know, just judging by what I see out there, and I try to read pretty broadly. There are lots and lots and lots of people who still are very vociferous supporters of Hillary, and they're very and there are very vociferous supporters of Bernie, and they hate each other's guts, and apparently they have absolutely nothing better to do with their time than picking at the other side's or throwing salt in the open wounds. I don't. It hasn't even had a chance to scab over. And Tracy, you asked me, do I think they will? I can't answer that question, but I can tell you this: they damned well better.
They need to.
They better. Otherwise, you know, it's not going to be a three vote majority in the Senate. They could wind up with a filibuster proof majority in the Senate, the Republicans, and the House could go from being a bare majority to be in a much larger majority, because all bets are off now. It used to be, you said, you know, the conventional wisdom was, well, the president in power, the president's party doesn't do well in midterm elections. That's the way things are, you know, just traditionally have run in this country. Guess what?
Not anymore.
All bets
Not
are
anymore.
Off. There are no norms. Anything can happen. And the only potential antidote to that is unity. And if Hillary says, on the one hand, she says she's done as a candidate, on the other hand, she says she's not going to stay out of the debate. Well, I don't know how you get, you know, apart from showing up on news programs and doing book tours, I don't know how you're part of the debate if you're not a candidate for something.
And especially when you're constantly blaming, I mean, it's like, okay, I haven't read the book yet, but I know, because Jan owns the book, she bought the book, but I know one of the things that everybody has been pointing out, and how she's still blaming Bernie for her loss.
Well, I haven't, you said Jan's bought the book, read the book. I have not read the book, so I'm not going to comment on what's in a book I haven't read. I will simply say that we're screwed if the bitterness doesn't go away. And if you not to keep coming back to that documentary, but I've spent what is it going to be 20 hours by the time we're all said and done watching it. All you got to do is watch the 1968 election part. And watch the Democrats tearing each other to damn pieces. And then Nixon just waltzes right in. But the thing is, it was not a landslide. You know, everybody remembers the landslide of him beating McGovern. But nobody seems to remember that it was a relatively close election between him and Humphrey. And a little bit less division, and it could have been President Humphrey and not President Nixon. Now, what does that do relative to the Vietnam War? I don't know, but I know
Have Nixon's picture in all the orderly rooms.
Okay, that's a start. We also would not have had Watergate.
If Hillary even thinks to run it again, and if she does.
Oh my God.
That's just a horror movie that I don't want to relive again.
Hey, another thing we wouldn't have had if we hadn't had Nixon is we wouldn't have had Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and that whole gang of crooks that later.
Right.
You know,
and in the documentary, he keeps coming back for interview segments with John Negroponte, who is one of the most, who's one of the bloodiest, most nefarious, most evil State Department functionaries south of Henry Kissinger.
By the way, didn't he endorse Hillary? I think Negroponte came out for Hillary in the last election. Not that that makes, you know, Hillary the devil, but, you know.
All I'm pointing to is that those two politicians, and they are both politicians, Bernie's in office, she's not, have got to do something. I mean, look, you know, ooh, Bernie's not a Democrat. Ooh, all he was trying to do was tear up the Democratic Party. And then the other side says, oh, Hillary's the devil. Yeah, and all it does is guarantee all of us more misery, more suffering. We are every bit of a little more than 8 months into the Trump administration. It feels like 8 years. Now contemplate the second term. Contemplate him with the bit in his teeth. Contemplate him not having to worry about re-election. Contemplate him with a huge majority. Contemplate him with a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate.
My liver nor my heart can't take it. I'll be gone. I won't last, man.
Can we discuss something less heavy, Bob?
Sure.
How about a concert report?
We got a few minutes here.
Okay. I saw Tom Petty both last Thursday and Friday nights at the Hollywood Bowl. Tremendous shows. The only reason I went back-to-back nights is I had I bought the tickets originally for the Thursday show. They're like in the same row, but like 20 seats apart. And then he announces a second show, which was Friday. And then he ended up having the third show this past Monday, but I didn't get those tickets. But, you know, I was trying to sell the Thursday tickets on StubHub and couldn't sell those. So I just had my son meet me at the Hollywood Bowl. And, boy, I forgot where the Hollywood Bowl was located. And my traffic application wouldn't work. And so finally I was like in Griffith Park, which is, you know, which is way east of the Hollywood Bowl. It's like 5 miles away. And I finally hit my OnStar button and said, hey, I need directions to get to the Hollywood Bowl. I was like driving all over Hellsville, these roads I wasn't familiar with, like in the, you know, the hills above, you know, LA and shit. And so I finally got to the, I finally arrived at the bowl, like at about, I think it was 8:30. Petty hadn't come on yet. My son was already there. He'd gotten a seat. And, you know, I waited in line for like a beer for like the first five songs of Petty. So, I mean, I saw him in June. So I wasn't missing too much. I was going to see him Friday. But, boy, that guy is a hell of a performer. So this was the set list. It was pretty much the same both nights, except there was one song they switched out. The first night, well, both nights started out with Rocking Around With You, Mary Jane's Last Dance, which is awesome, You Don't Know How It Feels, Forgotten Man, which is Think Off his new album, I Won't Back Down, Free Falling. On Thursday, he played a song called Walls, which I wasn't that familiar with. On Friday, instead of that song, he played Into the Great Wide Open, which is a great song. And then the rest of the songs were the same both nights. That Don't Come Around Here No More, It's Good to Be King, Curling Back to You, Wild Flowers, which he really likes and plays really well, Learning to Fly, You're So Bad, I Should Have Known It, Refugee, Running Down a Dream. And then the encore songs were You Wreck Me and American Girl. So he played like 18 songs. It must have been a couple of hours, I'm guessing. He went over the limit both nights.
Yeah, they don't like that at the bowl.
Yeah. Well, he paid. He said that Friday night he paid a fine of, like, I think $5,000 for the previous night. He said, "Hey, let's go longer this time. Fuck it." Not, he didn't say fuck it, but you know.
Prince, I saw Prince of the Ball, and he did the same thing. He did the exact same thing. Prince, he's like, you know what? Because you know Prince was like that too. It's like you can't tell me how long to play. I'm Prince.
Right.
You know.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I took the first night I parked, like, since I got in late, they have like stacked parking at the Hollywood Bowl. So you have to like wait till everybody in front of you goes before you can go. They line these cars up, like, you know, probably like rows of maybe 100 cars or more in a row. And so if you have one asshat who doesn't get to their car, the concert, everybody behind them has to wait until they get to their car, you know? But fortunately, I was at the very back of the line, except I was between, like, two vehicles that were kind of on my side. I could back out, but not until they had moved a little bit, because there was, like, I couldn't have made it without, like, scraping my mirrors against their mirrors. I don't want to do that, you know? And so they got back to their car within about 20 minutes, and so I was able to back out and you know, wasn't too bad getting out. But the second night, I just took a shuttle bus and had a date, and it was okay. I mean, I just didn't really connect a great deal, you know. Oh, she was a nice lady, but not exactly my type, you know. So.
Oh, and by the way, just a complete shift of sorry. I didn't realize this, but Tom Price is gone.
Yeah, I was trying to say.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah.
I posted that before the show, Bob.
Yeah, I didn't catch that. I was wrapped up in other stuff, but.
May I give everybody food for thought until you get back, and we can all think on this.
Yeah.
And this is kind of heavy too. JFK, all his classified documents are going to be declassified unless Trump jumps in and says no, you can't do that. So,
and unless the CIA requests.
Well, I heard it was all come down to Trump. So what reason would he have to do that, Bob?
Because he's Trump.
Well, that'll give us something to think about until Bob gets back, you know.
He's not going to do
that. What is that? What is it? Is it the 17th?
You know, I don't have a date certain. I could probably get you one, but it may take me a few minutes. By that time, we'll be off air, but... It's just something to think about. Why would Trump? I mean,
because
is this
Trump.
The JFK assassination materials? He's not going to declassify.
Yeah. We don't know that he's not. It's if he decides not to.
No.
Didn't Ted Cruz's father have something to do with the assassination?
not to pee on anybody's Wheaties or anything. And not to be a conspiracy theorist, those documents would not be released if they answered any questions.
Of course not.
I believe that, Bob. That's a good point.
A quick note to share coming in from what we were talking about, unity and everything. James writes and says, I grew up with a relatively liberal Supreme Court. My son, who cannot yet see its value, also can't see the value of unity. I've now spent most of my life with a conservative court. The court casts a long shadow in our lives. We need unity before they pack the court for 50 years. And arguably the court's already packed for 50 years. And what we're talking about is the next 100 or the next 50 after that. So,
well, I would say it's more like 30 years because usually, Bob, the justices don't get appointed until they're sometime in their age 50.
And Gorsuch is 50. Roberts
is
he's
going to serve for another 35 years.
40.
40 maybe. Okay.
And the same and the same with Roberts, and he hasn't been on for that long.
He's like 60 though now, I think.
I won't be alive.
Maybe he's even older. Maybe he's 62 by now. He had some kind of a heart issue when he first got on the court, if you recall.
Gotta have a heart to have an issue.
Maybe he'll tip over. Maybe he'll tip over.
Wait a minute. Cowbell for Tracy. Hey.
Tracy, what'd you say?
All over that heart stuff lately.
You got to have a heart to have an issue.
Well, Dick Cheney still has the – he had the Vlad for a long time, I know. And now he stole someone's heart, so there you go.
Again, see, he didn't have some – you know, he stole somebody else's heart.
Yeah. Yeah, he needed one, exactly.
On a lighter note, can I jump in and give an animal report?
Absolutely.
It's not rats. I got somebody else visiting the estate here.
Yes.
A family of raccoons.
Those are fun. Do you feed them, Sparky?
Well, I put some dog food out for them since I had some extra dog food at my steps.
Oh, they're never going to leave now.
Well, I'm going to be babysitting Grady, the man cave dog, here pretty soon. As soon as they get down here. They were supposed to be down this weekend for my wife's birthday. My daughter-in-law's mother passed away this morning, so
I'm sorry to hear it.
But anyway, I chased the raccoon. I come, grabbed my flashlight, ran outside when I saw him set off the motion sensor light. I just caught a brief glimpse of him heading towards the redwood tree. So I ran outside, and I got there, on the other side of the redwood tree, there's a bunch of ivy, and I shined the light over there, and all of a sudden I seen these three heads and just three eyes, three pairs of eyes poked up out of the ivy. So I started walking over towards the redwood tree, and all of a sudden I hear all this scratching noise, and there's two juvenile raccoons just hauling ass up the side of the redwood tree to get to a limb for safety. Once they got up on the limb, they just, both of them turned around, and they just sat there and stared at them, and I started talking to them, and they just kept moving their heads one way and the other way.
They're smart little rascals. As long as they don't. The only problem is, unlike possums, they are known to occasionally carry rabies. So just be careful. I don't think you're gonna be. I don't think you're gonna be able to electrocute these, Sparky.
I know that. I know where I can get a trap if they get too bad. They only come around every couple of nights. I've left dog food out in a bowl of water. And you can tell when they've been around because the bowl of water is just filthy dirty. And the dog food's all gone.
Well, we have a rodent that Alex and Jack,
Then about a week ago, I had a coyote. I was sitting here looking out at the pasture through the big door. All of a sudden, this coyote comes trotting through the pasture. Cows were on the northeast. East end of the pasture, so they weren't. And he just trotted right through this pasture.
You'll forgive me for wishing he'd been wearing Acme rocket skates.
Well, he went through the fence and he got into the other pasture. So I dug out my .22 that used to shoot ground squirrels with. And I took a shot at him with a .22 short. I knew it wouldn't even come close to him. I just wanted to see if you'd stop, turn around, look at me or anything if you heard the bullet. But no, just kept on going. And I talked to the rancher the other day, the guy that owns the ranch. He said, yeah, the coyotes are all around the backside of the house. And then he says the raccoons have been coming up and eating his dog food because he has two dogs. So I guess they come down through the pasture.
Right, the raccoons come to eat the dog food, and the coyotes come to eat the raccoons.
I heard you.
And the raccoons will eat the possums if the possums.
If they don't get out on the highway, though, I mean, here in these parts, the only time you ever see a raccoon is when it's a flat raccoon on the highway.
And to be fair, to say that word, Tracy, without the RAC in the front of it, is not always a slur.
I know. Oh, but I get raccoons in my neck of the woods, and they're huge because of the, they eat the garbage. But I was getting out of my car the other night, and there were these two. They were about the size of Kimba, and I just sat in my car and waited for them to go away. And they because it was trash night the night before, and I'm just like, okay, because I am truly a city girl, and I'm like, I am not, because they look like they could take me out, and I'm like, I'm not getting out of my car until they leave. And they wandered and they lingered. I saw there was a raccoon, two raccoons the other night, and a coyote down here. And I'm like, what? I do not live in the Wild Kingdom. What the hell is this?
You do now.
All right, well, we got to get out of here, y'all. It's been a fun Friday on the front porch. I really do appreciate it. And I thank everybody for your participation, sitting and listening, sharing on the podcast, participating in the group, whatever way you do so. Thank you to everybody. I'm going to miss you. I'll miss you these next week, but I'm already looking forward to next week's Friday on the front porch. I really am. In the meantime, just a gentle reminder, reach out to your senators. Tell them that you'd like to see the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act introduced in the Senate. And like I said, tell them that you want to see the National Academy of Science review of mountaintop removal health science data fully funded and restored, that the suppression of science in this country is un-American. Okay? Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you. Thank you all week long to Sparky and Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Good night, y'all.